just satsang now?
Satsang.
Okay. How does this knowledge relate to vyavahara?
How does the knowledge relate to just empirical, the worldly, day-to-day living?
Yes.
How do you think it does?
I don't know.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good. That means I have to answer. You know, I think the problem is with life is that we need things to be different than they are, you know, in order for us to feel whole and complete and be able to say everything's fine. Everything's fine with me. Not just as words. You can say that and be faking it. But to actually feel that everything is fine, that I'm whole and complete and all is well with me. And then to feel that and not feel threatened that that's going to go away. See, we get those little glimpses and those are really nice. Everything's fine with me. How to hang on to that. You know, how to hang on. I remember that when I was about 18 or so, I had that feeling for some reason, I don't know what happened, but everything seemed just fine and that I was really me. Everything was, this is how I'm supposed to be, this is who I'm supposed to be. Just the sense of myself was so there, you know. But it didn't stay. And of course, as soon as I had that sense of wholeness and kind of fullness and meanness, of course fear came because I knew that I wouldn't be able to hang on to it. And of course I couldn't, and then I couldn't get it back either. You know, I knew it was there, but I couldn't get it back. I didn't know where it was. I didn't know where it went. You know, so how that, but that's what we want. It was very obvious to me that at that time that that's who I am, and that's how I should always be. But of course, as long as there's a need, and as long as there's an identification of yourself with your mind, there's no constancy. That identification, just take the, let alone the body, but the identification with the mind is so complete that whatever affect or feeling is going on in the mind, that's who I become. So kind of like a kaleidoscope in a way, I'm becoming this, and then I'm becoming that, and becoming this. And the mind is such that you can't stop that process of becoming. You know, and so whatever affect happens to rise, that's who I am at the moment. Right? And so there is no, initially for a person, there is no discrimination between yourself and all of these experiences that you're having, all of these emotions that you're having, all of the thoughts that you're having. There's no discrimination. There's no stable person there. And so we're trying to find the stable person, trying to create the stable person by creating a stable situation which I'm comfortable in. But that's also a really hard task because the universe keeps coming along and wrecking it. Something will, you know. So you think that things are going to be fine, well, that's the beginning of the problem. You know, as soon as you've kind of reached that plateau, now everything's fine, but now it keeps moving. So it'll move away from that fineness. That's the nature of the universe, that's the nature of the body, that's the nature of the mind. And so if I'm looking for a stable sense of well-being from these things, it's not going to happen. You know. But that's a problem because these things, in fact, are what make up my experience, except for that one that I take for granted. That is there continually, one with, as though, all of those experiences. It is so continually one with all experience that I never differentiate it. Right? And so, because I don't differentiate it, it's always taking on the qualities of all those experiences. And so I don't have a self, basically. I am just changing. I am a person of changing experiences. You know, that isn't. There's nothing stable about that. And so, say I could feel. Everybody feels, and I just want to be whole. I want to be free. I want to be full. I want to be complete, and so that I can just relax. A fullness or a wholeness that I don't have to. That can't be taken away from me. And that doesn't exist in the world. Because the world is always changing. And so, how can I be free then? If I'm dependent in any way on the world to give me that. It's not possible. The world's not capable of giving that. It's not in its nature. You know? But then what the Upanishads are for somebody, everybody seeks that wholeness, that freedom. And that's why in the Upanishads there's always a dialogue between the teacher and the student, where the student goes and approaches the teacher and says, who am I? Is there anything about me that is whole and complete and stable? And that's what the whole teaching is about. It's for the mind to be able to help the mind differentiate that which is whole and complete and stable and free. When we did the meditation, we're all relaxing. If you're able to engage in that meditation. When you relax everything, you know, you kind of relax everything and then you just pull in to see, well, who's there when all of this activity is not happening? You know, who is the me that's present when you've kind of relaxed everything else away? That person is not a stranger to you, right? Not a stranger at all. But that person is never recognized per se as I am. It's always only in the context of moods, emotions, or engagements in one way or another. You never recognize that stable presence in the midst of all activity, in the midst of all of your emotions, you know, in the midst of your anger, in the midst of your hurts. That stable presence isn't recognized. All that's recognized is I am hurt. That's the superimposition. And so, this knowledge, what does it do? What's the relationship that it has to Vyavahara? The relationship is your freedom. The recognition of yourself as a free self. And the mind, then, having that stable presence to hold it. Which I consider so important, because even if your mind is not living up to your knowledge, still has this hurt and that hurt and is getting engaged in the world in this way and that way and this way, reacting, all the reactions that we have. All of that, all of those reactions, all of those hurts take place in my presence. And so there's somebody holding that hurt self. Or a happy self, or agitated self, or neutral self. There's a self, my neutral mind, happy mind, etc. There's a self that is always the same, no matter what's going on. And then now the question is, what's the nature of that self? Is it a crabby self, or is it a hurt self? What is its nature? And its nature is. I mean, you have to tell yourself, you have to discover that for yourself, that we use words like it's so stable and strong and full and whole and benign. These are just pointers. Their words don't mean anything unless they point to that, use those words to point to that very stable, whole fullness that's there. So that's the beginning of this knowing. That's only the beginning of it. You know, that differentiation. Then we have to recognize, what is all this? You know, all of these things that I... What is the nature of all of this that I experience? This creation that I experience. This creation, this body, in fact. I experience this body like I experience the rest of the creation. This body belongs to the creation. It's also part of the creation. Right? My sense organs are part of the creation. My mind, which I'm also aware of, is part of the creation. It's like a dream character, this whole thing. It's like a dream character. You may be identified with a dream character in the dream, but that dream character is part of the dream creation. It's part of the dream story. not separate at all. So all of these things that are points of identification for me, I am my body, I am my mind, I am my sense organs, I am angry, I am happy, I am sad, all these points of identification, where you're actually identifying yourself as being these things that are actually experiences that belong to the creation. And so then we have to come into understand what is the relationship of this silent, strong, changeless presence, me, with this creation that includes my body, mind, sense organs. So then this is a lot of teaching involved in that. You know, till you start understanding that just like if I have a dream, how that entire dream is blessed by my presence. Or just think about it. If you have a dream, the entire dream is blessed by your presence. The whole dream enjoys me, my being. Right? Now, this room, in the same way, this room, this whole room, and I'm looking at the room through my sense organs right now. I see the room through my eyes. My body, so say you're looking at the room, right? Now notice that your eyes are also seeing your body. It's not just everybody else and your body's invisible. Your body's also included in this perception of the room. Right? And now if you go inward a little bit, you can realize that in this, the perception of this room, my body is included. Now I can also include my awareness of my sense organs as I'm aware of this room. That my sense organs are included also. Now I can also see any kind of fluctuations that are going on in my mind or any moods. That's also included in this perception, right? So now I'm including, in fact, in this perception of the room, my body, my mind, my sense organs, my thoughts, my moods, my emotions, my eye thoughts, all, and the room, everything. It's all included, right? So now I can say, in fact, everything that I'm perceiving, all of it is included in my awareness. All of it is in me as a conscious being, including this body. The whole thing is in me. There's nothing that's away from me. We're only used to having this me identified with this body, mind, sense organs, and there's me and you. But in fact, if this body, mind, sense organs belongs to the room, it's part of the room, it's part of the perception, right? Then the whole perception enjoys me. See, like right now, if I say, ask you, think of a meadow. Just try to imagine a meadow. That whole meadow that you're seeing with the sky, whatever the sky looks like, and the trees, and the meadow and the mountains, that whole meadow has me in it. I am the being of the meadow. I'm the conscious being of the meadow. See that? Any thought you have, I'm the conscious being of the thought. You see that? So I am the skin, too, I can say, if I ask you to imagine the meadow, then if I say, I am the self of the meadow, do you see how that's true? Mm-hmm. If I have the meadow thought, then the meadow thought takes place in me. My being is the self of the meadow. So the meadow comes from me, sustained by me, goes back into me. I'm its being, I'm its self. Do you see that? Mm-hmm. Well, it's easy to see it with a thought, right? Like a meadow thought, or imagine the ocean, you can do the same thing. And see, I'm the self of it. Well, now here, instead of having a thought of the meadow, let's have a thought of this room, using my sense organs. Right? Through the sense organs, I get a perception of this room that gives me a thought modification of everything that's included in the perception, right? Which includes this body, mind, sense organs, and then thought modification could be tainted with some sort of an emotion, so it could be a happy perception of the room, or an agitated perception of the room, or a sad perception of the room, right? That's all contained in the thought. But I am the self of that thought. If I'm the self of the thought, the conscious being that the thought is enjoying, then I'm on the right side of the thought, and the left side of the thought, at the top of the thought, the bottom of the thought, in and through the thought, I am the self of the thought. See that? You never have an experience that's away from that truth. You are the self, right? You are the self of whatever experience that you have. And the experience that you have is much greater than this body-mind-sense organs. And so, if you can help sometimes when we're doing even an open-eyed meditation, if you just relax and become completely aware of everything that you're perceiving at this moment. Right? And then notice that your being, the me, is not contained in the body. It's contained in the thought. It's not contained in the body. So the sense, this me, this very, you know, the me that I take to be me, doesn't exist in any particular place. Rather, every experience I have, right, exists with it as its being. So that's just looking at it subjectively from the individual, but if we go on, you know, with more unfoldment, you see that in fact it's this self which is not contained, is not contained. It's not contained, and so this self that I am is in fact the self of all beings. It's a self of the whole universe. It's Ishvara. Because consciousness, it's not consciousness, your being can't be objectified as an object. It just is, you know, the conscious existent reality. I am the conscious existent reality that everything enjoys. And so once I understand, as I start to see that, to really understand that, then I have a different relationship as a jiva, body, mind, sense organs, with this creation. Right? Because this becomes, instead of me and this limited jiva walking through the world, the inert world, this becomes part of this bigger picture. Like, for instance, if you have the meadow, and you're walking, you imagine walking through the meadow with your friends or whatnot. You, your friends, and the meadow are the self. See what I mean? You are the self, the whole. It's not that there's one self, little person, walking around in an inert meadow. It's that the whole meadow is yourself. And so here, the whole creation is yourself. And this body, mind, sense organs is living out, you know, its part in the whole picture. That's what we call the power of the karma. And so that allows you to relax. That there's a, you're part of a bigger story. This jiva is part of a bigger story. Right?
I can sort of get, both by experience and intellectually, that I am all that is being watched or being perceived, all the thought modification and all the objects that are in my sphere. Where it seems to fall apart for me is that I am beyond the universe. I am the universe beyond that perception, like what's happening across town.
Yeah.
And somehow that feeling knowing falls apart, and the intellect can't grok that.
Right, I understand. See, the thing is, first thing we have to be able to understand it is on an individual level. Like, say, if you can really understand, I am the self of this room, right? And the conscious being that I am is changeless, it's not objectifiable, it's the pervasive being, meanness, in which this whole thought modification, individual thought modification exists. So say, it's easier now on that level to have kind of a direct recognition of that, right? Okay, so that's good. Now, in order to be able to extend that beyond your experience, because see, every individual, all of us, through our own unique individual minds, we have limited experience, right? And so your limited experience can't tell you what's going on even next door. You have no idea. Okay. But you can have direct, immediate knowledge just right here and now of your relationship to your experience. Right? So that you can, what I mean is you can recognize the freedom of your own self, and also in reference to your experiences, how you are the self of those individual experiences. Are you with me completely?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But now the question is, okay, let's go out like this. This might help. That's true for me. It's true for you. It's true for you. It's true for the person in China. It's true for the person, right, in Germany. It's true for the Martian. It's true for all beings. Why? See, if it's true for all beings. Because the self is non-objectifiable, right, as an object. It's not going to be an object in the creation. And so, therefore, that self is only one. The self is only one. So the self that I am is yourself. Still okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now, look at the situation. From my vantage point, I can say, from the standpoint of my mind will say, yeah, I, the Atma is the self of this mind and everything else and everything in it. You'll say the same thing. Yourself, you're the self, which is myself, there's only one self, of all of your experience. Now, there's no division between the Atma. There's not two Atmas. Right, because what would divide it? The self is not objectifiable. So there's only one self. Now, that one self, what are its limits? You know, does it have any boundaries? There can't be any boundaries because it's not objectifiable to have something come in and give it a boundary. So now, that one self, in reference to the entire creation, where does it stop? Where does it start? See what I mean? Okay, so now what that means is that this entire creation has a self. Not just this individual mind or this individual mind or this individual mind. So then the question is, does this entire creation has a self? Like, because there's no place where the self is not. The self doesn't have a place. In place you need time and space. There is no place. It is the reality of what is. I am the reality of what is. And what is now? So now, what is the relation? You can see what the relationship of the reality of what is this me to your individual mind, but what is it to the whole universe? See? There's going to be no part of the universe which is free of that. Now, let's go back into the universe. Does the universe itself, this creation, have any substance in and of itself, apart from that self? Now we can analyze the universe to see if in this universe that we analyze, like if we take the lamp or this, you know, this this stand for the mic, this table, is there a table? Is there such a thing as a table? You'd say, yes, table is actually, it's a word for a bunch of things put together. Right? That's what makes this a table. A table is a concept. But there's no such thing as an object table. Table is a conglomerate of a bunch of other words, like legs and, you know, etc. Everything is like that. Everything is infinitely divisible. There's no thing that you can find. You can just kind of, you can find words for conglomerates. But you can't find a thing in the universe. One thing you can say about the universe is that everything in it exists. Everything in it exists, but there's nothing that you can find that exists. So what it boils down to, there's nothing you can... Everything exists. It is, it is, it is, it is, it is, it is. Can you look at existence? No. You can only be existence. You can't look at it. But everything that you experience, it is, it is, it is, it is. If you go to try to find the existence in it, you can't. In fact, you'll take that object, whatever it is, and you'll take it apart and take it apart, take it apart, looking for some final existence. You'll never find it. Because existence is non-objectifiable. It is the nature of being itself, consciousness itself. It is the substance of everything, but you can't find it here. Where do you find it? It's your own being. There is no I am, it is. Right? There's only amness. There's no objectification to the amness. There's no looking at amness. There's no objectification to the existence, to being itself. So what does it all mean? Is that you think that your experience is just limited. Well, the self isn't limited. The experience, that the relationship you have with your individual thought modifications is the relationship that everybody has with them. Right? And then you go and you analyze the creation itself to find out if there's any type of being in the creation, any type of substance in the creation. And you find, yes, there is substance to the creation, but that substance is my being. It doesn't have any being of its own. Because everything is changing, everything is infinitely divisible. You can't find a thing there. Are you starting to see? And so you're trying to, your concern is from going from the individual to the collective. From the individual experience to the universal experience, right? The self is not objectifiable, so there's only one experience, right? And the body, mind, sense organs are included in the whole. And even if you were to analyze your body, mind, sense organs experience, it's all infinitely divisible, as is everything else in the creation. And so there is no substance to be found in the creation other than the awareness, awareful being that you are. But I can use the experience of every individual within the creation to recognize its relationship with the oneself.
Can this be verified? See, some of this can be verified through one's experience in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
What you say. And some of it can only be deduced by intellectual reasoning. Or at least that's how I feel. So my question is it possible to verify through experientially that which the infiniteness that you're speaking of outside of the parameters of our sense organs?
Okay. The infiniteness of the self. Is that what you mean? The infinite nature of the self?
The infinite nature of the self and the oneness, the one substance. Can that be experienced? Can that ever be experienced by the finite nature of these sense organs? Or is it faith? Or an intellectual construct that you have to accept.
Oh, I understand. No, it's not faith, it's not intellectual construct. Here's where you're getting into probably some problems. First of all, the sense organs are limited. Right? Everybody's sense organs are limited. So only capable of limited experience within a seemingly infinite manifest creation. Okay? But the self is not experienced by your sense organs. Your sense organs are only capable of experiencing the sense objects. Like my ears will experience sound, my eyes color, my sense of touch. That. So those are limited experiences, but they're limited experiences that we can understand in a more universal way through understanding kind of the universality of the experience. For instance, if I see color and there's a subject-object relationship for me, that will be true for you also, your eyes and the perception of color. So we can make universals out of these things and have kind of an infinite extension. Now, the extended infinitely throughout the universe in the subject-object relationship. But the nature of yourself, of consciousness, which is not objectifiable. In other words, I can't look at consciousness. I can't hear consciousness. I can't be aware of consciousness as something other than consciousness. The consciousness is not an experience that requires a mind or sense organs. It's because consciousness is there that the mind is illumined and the sense organs are illumined. Okay? So now, this consciousness that can't be objectified into a subject-object relationship or exist as an object in duality, how is it known? What? It doesn't need to be known because it is consciousness. In other words, on one level, I like this. I need my eyes to see that painting. I require my eyes, right? And so like that, do I require something to turn around and look at consciousness, to become aware of consciousness? Say no. Consciousness is self-effulgent. It's self-evident because it is consciousness. Right? Consciousness is conscious of consciousness, not as a subject-object relationship, but because it's just consciousness. So we say it's self-evident. It's the bottom line. That's why when we meditate, say, for instance, and we kind of just totally relax and turn our attention away from any type of external experience, whatever I happen to be doing, consciousness is there, stable, illumining that. When I shut down all of these experiences, consciousness is still there, stable, illumining it. But it doesn't require anything at all for it to be known because it's self-evident. See what I mean? Okay, so now, this self-evident consciousness, how big is it? Big, small? These concepts involve duality. They involve subject-object relationship. For something to be big, it has to be in relationship to something. There has to be space there. So consciousness is not big or small. It's, in fact, it has nothing to, when we say infinite, it's not infinite in terms of size. It's infinite in terms of its non-duality, which means that the consciousness that you are is not partially experienced by you at this moment. It is fully, completely experienced. It is its own self-evident experience. We say that it's infinite because there's nothing else but consciousness. For there to be something else, we have to look out here in within duality and find something. What can you find? Anything you say, well, like here's the stand for the microphones. I'll say, no, that's not a stand. That's a bunch of wood and plastic and nails put together. And then I would take those apart into smaller and smaller and smaller parts, infinitely divisible. There's no such thing here. And the whole creation is like that. You can't find any substance here. What you're always left with in your analysis, this isn't just intellectual, I'm talking real, hands-on analysis. There is nothing left here except being. You can divide and divide and divide, and whatever you end up with, it is, it is, it is. But in the end, you end up only with being itself, because you have to take the form off to find the substance. You take the form off, finally, then what's there is formless. It's just being itself. That being is not big or not small. It is the self. It's the one self of all that is. And that, so that's what we mean by infinite. What that means is when you're just recognizing, say, your mind, you're quietening down everything, and you just are, even right now at this moment, you are fully, completely. It's not like you're a partial experience of yourself. You know, like, well, think we're partial experience, having this kind of logic. Like if I, here's the big, vast expanse of a very clear blue sky. No clouds or anything, just very clear blue sky. I have a little mirror in my mind, and I hold it up to the sky. Right? Now, the only thing that little mirror is experiencing is the sky. Nothing else. And wherever it looks, it's still only going to experience the sky, right? But the sky is bigger than the mirror, isn't it? The sky's out there, the sky's back there. Here's a little mirror. Because it's a mirror, it'll always only reflect the sky, but the sky is much bigger than it. And so the sky's experience is something that the mirror doesn't really have. Because the sky experience is bigger than the mirror. So the mirror has only a partial sky experience. You following me?
Mm-hmm.
Here that's not the case. Because the self isn't big or small. It's not the self, it's a big expanse of self, and your little mirror, and here's another little mind mirror, and here's another little mind mirror. They're all reflecting parts of this big infinite self. It's not that. We say the self is infinite because there is nothing else. It's not infinite in terms of size. There is no size. Once you get rid of time and space, there's just non-dual consciousness, which isn't big or small. It doesn't have an up or a down. In fact, when you do contemplation and you're just kind of relaxing into your own me-ness, you ask yourself, have your mind ask yourself, am I big or small? Am I tall? What color am I? You'll find these questions are totally irrelevant. They have no meaning at all. Because this me is not about big or small, or it's not black or white, it's not about color, not about size, not about texture, or the right side is a little scratchy, the left side is smooth. It's not about texture. And you can recognize that when you just ask these questions, you see how that these questions kind of fall apart. You know? Are we getting closer?
Can I take the space with one more question?
Sure.
I read something the other day, and I just wondered if you could comment on it, if your take on it, and that was that something to the fact that the freedom comes not in believing that the world is illusion, but in understanding that you don't exist.
That's more of a some form of closer to a Buddhist quote than certainly not a Vedantic one. But even from a... But we wouldn't say it like that. It's not that you don't exist. It's that the only existence that there is you. Right? That there's no such thing as non-existence. That the problem is... Why say a Buddhist would say this? And that's why... You have to understand Buddhism, you have to come from a Buddhist perspective, and then you can understand what they say. Like, I can say to you, there is no you. There is no you. But what I'm talking about is that you're like a chariot. This is an example that is, you know, you've got a body and mind and sense organs and feelings and emotions and perceptions, all of these things, they're a conglomerate of things and consciousness in terms of a knower known relationship. There's no self there. These are all things put together that give the semblance of a self. And they use the example of a chariot. Like, for instance, we call this thing a chariot. It's not a chariot. It's, you know, chariot wheels and then the reins and the seat and the little cabin thing. And the axles, There's no thing. There's no thing there. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of things put together that once they're put together, you call it a chariot. And so now for you, there's a bunch of things put together there that we call as you as a person. But really, there's no such person there. So really, you don't exist. Right? So, and then they'll show the interdependence of all of these things, how all of these things are all totally interconnected. There's no self there. There's interconnectedness, everything depending upon everything else. So that's that's looking at it from the standpoint of this body, mind, sense organs, and all of these things that you have taken to be you. There's no you there. Okay? And so they stop there and they work with all of that in their own way. But so we work with it differently. What we'll say is that what you had taken to be you, right, is this limited body, mind, sense organs that in the same way is really a conglomerate. All of these things are illumined. They all come and go. They're all continually changing. Yeah? They're not you. Right? But then we'll point to who you are. We don't leave it at they're not you. Right? But we do say they are not you. They're Ishvara.
But right? Is that the difference between Vedanta and Buddhism?
Well, it's more complicated than that because one is coming from a totally different vantage point. It's a different way of, it's a whole different way of teaching. They use different pramanas. It's very, very different. But in the end, I think that the Buddhists are talking about Brahman.
I wanted to know wanted your advice and your perspective on that. It actually wasn't Buddhist that I was reading. It was a Neo-Advaita. But in any event, it kind of answered my question.
What Neo-Advaita?
I can't remember the book that I was reading. It was not Advaita Vedanta, but it was Neo-Advaita.
That would be like, Neo-Advaita, not
yeah.
Neo-Vedanta.
Right.
Yeah. That could be anything.
I kind of wanted to understand both sides of the coin, what we are not, but what take ourselves to be, mm-hmm. and then what we are.
Yeah. But even then, to say, all of this ends up to be mitya. Mitya means it only enjoys the being, the self, as its being.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we don't say this is non-existent. We say it's mitya. We're all experiencing it. How can we say it's non-existent? We just say that the truth of it, the substance that is here, is the one self, which I am. And this I am, the self that I am, is the self of the whole. It is the truth of the whole. It is Ishvara. So the very self that I am is the self of the whole, is Ishvara. So I can say, I am Ishvara. From the standpoint of the jiva, I would say, this body, mind, sense organs is part of Ishvara. Right? It's part of the whole, which is obvious. We're all part of the whole. But from the standpoint of myself, I am the whole. Right? From the standpoint of the self, I am Ishvara. There's only one self, not two. So the self that I am is the self that you are, is the self that the whole is. So I am the whole. I say I am the whole because this whole of this infinite creation has no being of its own apart from me. It's like if you had a bas-relief carving in a big chunk of clay. You say there's a very intricate bas-relief carving in that. It's all clay. Right? There's nothing there but clay. No matter how intricate the carving is. Yeah. So here, no matter how infinite, how intricate, how multidimensional this manifestation is, it's nothing but me. That's the satyam mitya. And if you analyze anything in the creation, you can't find anything here. On this level, it all works because our sense organs and whatnot, we are experiencing this duality. But if we go into it to find out what is actually here, we can't find it. We can't find anything here. But we're never, no matter how much we search, the one thing that remains constant is the Sat Chit, It is, and it is known, it is known. That is the reality. That's the self. So you can never, in no matter how much you explore, the one thing that will always be changelessly present is that self. So now, to get back to your original question, is if you, say you understand this little unfoldment that we've just been through, now to try to understand your relationship with the universe is enough for you now to understand just your relationship with the thought. If you can understand your relationship with the thought, that's your relationship with the entire creation. But as an from the standpoint of this jiva, I'm not omniscient, right? This body, mind, sense organs is within this creation. And so I only have limited perspective. But the limited perspective I have, like the relationship of the self to the mind, how I am the self of the thought. I am the one conscious being who is the self of the thought, like the meadow. If I can understand that, then when I understand that this body, mind, sense organs is part of this whole creation, then in the same way that I am the self of the thought, I am the self of the creation. Next thing you need to recognize is that the self is not a knower. That could get you mixed up. If you think the self is a knower, then I would be knowing this thought, but if there's only one self, then how could I know? The self is not a knower. It's with the mind that knowership takes place.
Is the self, would you say that the self is knowing?
Mm-mm.
I mean, like...
It's consciousness.
Right, that's kind of, yeah.
Yeah, it's knowing in the sense that it's consciousness, but it's not knowing anything. And if the mind is there, then the mind is known.
Right.
But if the mind's not there, it's just consciousness. The mind is there, that is illumined.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the sun's not doing anything. It is luminosity, it's a fireball, right? It's not performing an act of, oh, let me shine upon the earth. No. Because it is there, the earth is illumined. Because it is there, whatever is in its scope is illumined. Not that it's doing anything to illumine it. The consciousness is not doing anything to illumine, but whatever is manifest is known because that's the nature of the consciousness. So that's another nice meditation, is just recognizing that the knownness of consciousness is what everything enjoys that comes into your scope. And from the standpoint of Ishvara, then the whole manifest creation is known. Because the creation is, and that's Vedic, creation comes, the whole creation comes, is sustained and resolves. That you can't have direct knowledge of. You can appreciate it and see how it can't really be any other way. But you can't have a knowledge of Ishvara's form or the cyclical nature of the creation from the standpoint of the jiva. You know, you can know that from the Vedas. But you can recognize the satyam mitya, that myself is the truth of maya. The maya of this creation, the mityatva of the creation, you can know directly, immediately. The changelessness, the oneness of your being, you can know. And then by logical extension, you can see how this must be a manifestation of Ishvara, as it's said in the Vedas. I'm leaving some holes because it would take too long to... You know, that's days and days of unfoldment. But I'm kind of just making some broad strokes. Yeah.
The irony is that because of self-ignorance, we don't see ourselves as all complete. And yet we use the creation
to try to become complete.
To become. And that includes, you know, the teaching from a lot of
everything. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.